Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Bibi Hansen. I really enjoyed this conversation. We're going to get right into what it takes to engage in trauma-informed coaching, the role of coaching when trauma shows up, how we can identify signs of trauma. We'll get into the ethics of this. And actually, we'll go deeper into the evolving role of a coach and how this word coach is perhaps becoming a too small of a word for some people. I think this is such an important topic and one that's worth exploring in a more nuanced way than perhaps we often hold. And I think that's what we do here today. Bibi Hansen is the principal of presence-based coaching. She teaches all levels of their ICF-approved certification program. She is a leadership coach, supervisor, consultant, and trainer herself. If you are interested in staying in the loop about things we create other than this podcast, then you can head to coachesrising.com and put your name in the sign-up box that you find there. Let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Bibi Hansen. Before we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used. How to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey, so I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot.
So Bibi, here we are again. It's good to be with you. How are you in this moment?
I'm happy to be here too. It's been a little while, Joel. So it feels really good to be in the space with you.
I'm just enjoying your dress. People can't see this. They can only hear it, but it's like sparkling like stars. It looks amazing on camera. It's all like shimmering and sparkling.
Doesn't look like that in real life. It's just dots, but I like how it sparkles. I'm a big sparkle person anyway, so that's cool that you noticed that. Thanks.
Yeah. So we're going to focus our conversation today on trauma and coaching loosely and see where that takes us. And also I have some other potential topics to weave in. So actually, the first question I'd love to ask is connected to trauma and coaching. We just touched into this before when we checked in. Like, how do you feel? What's the invitation for coaches in these times? You know, there's so much uncertainty and this pace of change is really picked up, and you know, there's a lot of polarization and an intensity. How do you feel like coaches are being invited to adapt in our times to meet that?
Yeah, great question. So I like to call it the intersection of coaching and trauma, actually. I don't know why, but that word resonates for me. There's this intersection, which implies to me like we're on some sort of stream of life as coaches, and we have a certain way we coach and our usual kind of clients. And then the intersection to me means that there's another stream. So I'm using my hands, you know, together to forward to look at like a road or a stream of energy or experience. And it feels like and I've never said this before, so this is actually fun to create right now. So there is this sort of stream of historical trauma, we could call it, in some of our clients' lives that are starting to intersect in the coaching space. So it's beginning to show up more and more. And it's connect, at least in my experience and in my students and clients' experience. So it has to do with what you said at the beginning, the pace of change, the context, the global and the national context that we're all living in or each living in. We're still in a post-COVID water situation. You know, we're navigating these kind of choppy waters in corporate life and government life and our community life. So, you know, that's not really settled. And that also brought up the all of these conditions you're talking about, climate change, wars, economic pressures, that kind of thing, are bringing up some of the earlier historical traumatic experiences that are stored in the body of our clients that may not come up usually in a coaching conversation. And they seem to be emerging. So one of my teachers said that the stress in the environment begins to expose the fault lines in the client's foundation. So those kind of cracks are showing up because there's additional stress that we're all facing day to day stress. And so that is this intersection that's coming. And I think that that is the invitation for coaches, is to pay attention to that and to become what I would say and what many people call trauma informed. So more trauma informed as coaches. It feels like, you know, it's a necessary ingredient to effective coaching and to serving our clients, really. I think many clients don't understand what's happening to them when they can't stop crying or they can't get out of bed. And, you know, it's just very interesting to, or they're continually anxious or they leave their body. You know, they get sort of spacey and numb and they don't know where they are, disoriented. I mean, some of these could be part of trauma symptoms.
I was going to ask actually if you could just say a little bit more about what are some of the signs of when you could be with a client and, you know, they're exhibiting signs of trauma?
Yeah, so that goes like kind of right into the application piece of it. And I think there are many different signs and symptoms of trauma. I just want to say, can I just speak about what trauma is for a moment first, or how I view it? So, and I've been studying this in depth since 2021. In fact, it's in October, it'll be 3 years. So I am just informing myself in all kinds of ways, including classes. I was a former therapist. I was not a trauma therapist. So I do have access to a lot of current therapy practices, which I've been learning. Not that I'm doing therapy. I'm not. I'm doing coaching. And it's informed me in terms of what actually trauma-informed coaching could be, because I saw that's another intersection, to use that word. That's another intersection I saw in seeing kind of the current therapy practices around trauma, is that we can do some of that, some pieces of that. Now, I'm not saying coaches can take care of trauma. I'm not saying that, or provide trauma therapy. And I think some of the work that we do can be trauma-informed in the way that we can see what trauma symptoms might be with our clients. We can help them resource, especially in our stream of work, presence-based coaching. We work in and through the body a lot. That's connected. That is the nervous system. And so we're working with that. So that's just another intersection I see, that coaches don't have to stand back from what's happening. We can engage in a way that's skillful and serves our clients when they have symptoms of trauma that show up in coaching. So I can speak more to your question. Go ahead.
Could you say a bit more then what trauma is for you? You know, I know people talk about trauma with a capital T and developmental trauma and shock trauma.
Yeah. There's lots of different kinds. So I'm in the middle of the somatic experiencing training. So I have learned a lot more than I ever thought possible where traumatic events can happen, impact can happen to us from pre-birth to, you know, adulthood. And so what I'd say about it is that I really like Gabor Mate's definition of it, which is basically it's not what happens to you or around you. It's how it affects you. So in other words, it's the what he calls is the wounds that are sustained. So from inert, so another way of approaching that, what is trauma is in nervous system language, it's when our experience is too big, too intense for us, for our nervous system to digest, to take in and digest. So we basically store it. We store it in our tissues and our muscles and our bones. We store it in our system. And it's a lot of the time unconscious. So I think that's why it's coming up in coaching more now, because there is a lot of stress. And so that is sort of causing these symptoms to come up.
This is where, because as if you describe trauma in that way, I wonder if coaches might work with trauma. What I mean by that is that a lot of the conditioning of our clients actually occurs through experiences they weren't able to process growing up. And that's what's deeply impacting the way they show up now, the way they perceive the world and respond. And so this, I find this a fascinating topic, because I meet some coaches who are like very strict about the boundaries between trauma, between coaching and therapy, and even quite averse to working in any kind of emotional territory. But for me, it seems like if we're to do any type of meaningful developmental work, we're going to be working with people's trauma patterning, you know, depends what word we use. And so for me, it's like, yeah, any kind of like quite severe trauma. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have to be very clear about what my capabilities are, where in myself I haven't worked with my own trauma that then will show up as my clients touch into their trauma. So that's all absolutely strictly on the table. And this, you know, in this more kind of middle area, it seems like it's not as black and white as we like to say as a community, you know? Yeah.
I love that. And that's all. And of course I'm agreeing with what you're saying. It's to me, it's always been an ethical sort of dilemma. You know, when you look at ethics, even in the ICF code of ethics, it seems, and I teach this, it seems really black and white, you know? And when you get into this area of trauma and even our habits as a coach or the client's habits, it's not black and white. We have attachments, we have aversions, we have ways of not seeing that we're actually going toward our own desire of an agenda rather than the client's stated agenda, for example. And it gets messy in there. So yeah, you're talking about a pretty messy area. And we have some support around that, around, like you're saying, scope of practice. Like, I know I am not a trauma therapist. I know a lot about trauma and how it shows up now in my own system and in my client systems. And at the same time, if there is someone that is not able to function because of what's happening to them from the past, currently in the moment, then that's when I would refer out. So it is very similar to a therapy line, you could say. I mean, you could use that as a guideline. If I sense the client needs to go in their past, and then that I'm not going there. I'm definitely working in the present moment, and like you're saying, and being future oriented. So you can work in the present moment with certain things depending on your scope of practice. That means, are you trained to handle it and to be effective and skillful and not do damage? I mean, this is the ethical piece, I think. And there was something else I was going to say about, so I think that coaching has always been, this may lead us to the bigger question about coaching, but you know what coaching is evolving into. But I think coaching from its inception, it's like 27 years old or something like that from the ICF, maybe 28 now. It is always been about clients that are functional. It started out to be around performance coaching. So that's its early origins. And so clients, we're, you know, leaders in organizations, were fairly functional. And I mean, it's not like they couldn't get out of bed in the morning, for example, in that line where they might need therapy or support of a different kind, a trauma therapist. So it's evolved from there. Clients have evolved that come to coaching now. Coaching is exploding as a profession, you know. So it's been evolving depending on what's out there and who's showing up in the coaching chair with, you know, across from you as a coach. So that's a useful distinction in terms of therapy or trauma care. Is the client able to function in their lives? You know, do they have an ego that is whole and that can function? Is their nervous system becoming dysregulated in a work setting to the extent that they cannot function? You know, then that indicates some other need other than coaching. And I also want to add the distinction here about developmental coaching, because you said that as well. And that's what we do in presence-based coaching. We also look at what we call developmental coaching, refers to adult development and how adults develop and mature over time. And coaching is a huge support for adult development. And that's part of our stream. So that's what we, and presence-based coaching, that's what we do, is developmental coaching. We can do performance coaching too, but when you get into developmental coaching, you're talking about what you're talking about. Those early experience or even high school or college or adult experiences, including trauma, that shape people in a way where they cannot be functional in certain areas of their life. I'll stop there.
Yeah, no, beautiful. Yeah, that's where coaching can actually be healing, you know, like healing can take place inside of coaching. So whilst, you know, I it's not the primary, you know, you're not looking back therapeutically over your life. I think healing and integration is one of the primary drivers of development, as you're pointing to. And to the point where, you know, I noticed when I was an earlier coach and got into developmental ideas like developmental psychology, I was trying to make development happen, and it didn't really work. You know, I feel a lot of compassion for myself because I think that's a very natural thing to start to try to do. But actually, it was only when I started to embrace more of these modalities that actually facilitate integration and healing that actually my development started to unfold in a very organic and rich way. And I think that's fascinating to me. And actually I see almost like a convergence where some coaching approaches are like moving to the center and becoming more therapy like, you know, not in terms of their intention, but in terms of the way they work with people on a very fundamental level. And it's like some therapeutic approaches are becoming more coaching-like in that they're not pathology-based. Their foundation is based on the thriving of the human being, and that there's this natural, organic unfoldment that can take place where integration and healing and development occur. And yeah, there's, so yeah. I'm not sure there's a question in that, but I'll just see where you, if you respond.
Yeah.
To that.
Yeah. And so it seems like it's interesting. You're saying to the center. And so one that those are moving to the center, and one way I can see it slightly differently is that it's expanding into each other, you know? And so maybe that's also what's happening with coaching is it's, you know, we are meeting what's happening in the moment. At least in presence-based coaching, we are. I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, my experience has shown me that change happens in the moment. It doesn't happen in the conversation that you're going to have with your boss later. It happens now. So we work with what's happening now, what's coming up with the client now. So that is where change happens, right now, you know. So that definitely meets ICF guidelines of staying in the present moment and being future oriented. And sometimes history, past traumatic symptoms come up in the present, in the now. And so we can learn to help our clients stabilize that and come back into their window of tolerance. So their nervous system can settle and be more regulated. So that's something I think we can do as coaches. And that's, you would say, part of resourcing in a, you know, clinical therapeutic way. We could say we are a resource, you know, we offer a grounded nervous system to our clients. It's a biological co-regulation that happens when we do our own work, as you said, when we are grounded and present with the client and stable in our own nervous system, we offer that to our clients. So that's something that we've always done, you know, in my work. And so it's available. So I'm getting a little off track from your thing. Oh, yeah. So the other thing I wanted to say is about working in the present moment. So I think that is something that is not one person driving a conversation or pushing a conversation. You know, early in coaching, I was doing that too. Early as a therapist, I was doing that. So over the years, I've understood now that there's something greater, and I would even call it deep healing, that's possible, like you did. I add the word deep. When two people come together in some sort of space that doesn't hold some sort of direction. I mean, there might be a general direction that the client wants to go. And it's, I think it relates to trusting. I think it's connected to trusting that when two are together, there is, a lot of streams of wisdom talk about a third that gets evoked when two are together. You can call it as you wish. But there is some way that there is an unfoldment and an emergence. And so we can pay attention to that, even if it's something that we are surprised by or don't expect. You know, that's part of being present. We're dancing in the moment with what's emerging.
Yeah, I'm glad you share that, because I was going to ask, you know, do you think it's that we can... the only thing we can do is support our clients to move back into their window of tolerance, which is no small thing, by the way. You know, that's an amazing thing to be able to do. But it also sounds like we can also help them, in a sense, like process trauma, or like, and again, you know, of course, we have to be careful about what do we mean by that word trauma. I think we're excluding now the kind of, you know, severe trauma, you know, stuff that we feel we are not able to work with ourselves in our training. But at the same, you know, this smaller developmental conditioning that actually, yeah, there can be an integration of trauma and a healing can take place. Or would you still feel that saying that we can help coaches, we can help our clients as coaches heal trauma is still a bit too far?
That's a really interesting question. I think, that's a really interesting question. My body is feeling that I'm on the edge, you know, this is like we're on the edge of something, you know, and not good. So what I'm aware of, I think my stance is at this moment that I feel like I am not really qualified to deal with, especially early developmental trauma. I can support system. I can support nervous system regulation. I can support resourcing. And I think my presence can support awareness, you know, in the client's presence, because I'm helping the client cultivate their own ability to be aware through presence of what's emerging from them. So the way I sit with it now is I'm going to have a conversation with the client if their nervous system seems dysregulated. And that really points to that earlier question you were talking about, or what are the signs and symptoms? So we as coaches can be aware of these signs and symptoms of trauma or traumatic stress that emerge. And one key indicator would be a nervous system that has trouble regulating. It's out of its Dan Siegel window of tolerance. It's out of safe and social, which is the polyvagal theory, and it's stuck somehow. And that's the piece that I think we can support coming back into more regulation. And that is a big thing. It's something that happens over a lot of time in trauma therapy. So it's we can support that. And once the client is, you know, the back in a space in their nervous system where their brain's working again, where their higher function's working, then I would have a conversation. And I would say, you know, this may be something, this kind of reactivity that you continually have or whatever, may be something that's connected to past trauma. We may not know what it is. You may know exactly what it is. You know, some clients come in and say, my boss reminds me of my angry father and I can't cope with it. You know, I land up in a heap in my office crying after a meeting because I'm getting called out or whatever in front of other people. So I would say that there is healing, and that's the message I really want to share. Mm-hmm. Is that, and I feel that way now from really looking and investigating into my own trauma and to trauma through training, that this kind of trauma can be healed that is showing up in our coaching clients. It can be healed. And I'm probably not the person to do it. I can help you resource, and I can certainly help with post-traumatic growth. Like you're talking about that integration, you know, of who you really are and maybe taking, you know, more of an expanded sense of identity and who you take yourself to be post healing. I'm not sure about the inner workings. I think that takes a lot of time. And it takes a lot of expertise. And I think coaching can happen during that. It can be a parallel process. It doesn't have to be separated. And sometimes it does. I mean, this is how I've been actually with clients that needed and identified themselves, or I helped them identify that they needed therapy because they were really stuck. And I couldn't go there. I mean, they can't go there with me. It's not the right setting. And so it's a similar thing. You know, they are specialized help around trauma now. I mean, internal family systems, somatic experiencing, there's a lot of trauma work out there, trauma practitioners. I mean, they are cranking, those systems are cranking out practitioners every month, you know, every year. And so there is help. And I want to give the message, you don't have to be at the mercy of that past experience.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting you mentioned internal family systems. I was just thinking of that. I use it in my own coaching. And I think that's one of my, how could I say, like frames which I bring into this conversation in terms of, I found it incredibly powerful to work with clients with both the, you know, the firefighter, the manager parts, protector parts, and then these exile parts. As they show up in the coaching topics, in fact, as being one of the most important facets of unlocking, you know, being able to unlock, you know, that sense of things being caught up. And I'm very mindful of, again, what we've been talking about many times, like where's my boundary and what types of parts and topics do I feel I can work with. And I've just found on the other side that it's been incredibly healing for clients to meet these, particularly these exiled parts. And if you're trained properly, it's very compassionate and it's very, you're following the process. And it's again, it's that organic kind of healing that you're tapping into. So is that trauma healing? Like, I don't know. Like, so anyway, but maybe not to belabor the point too much, but I think I find it really interesting that this, I think, is one of the edges of coaching. And I'm curious where we'll be 5-10 years from now and around this stuff. You know, my sense is there might be practitioners emerging who are trained in both, you know, are able to really go into, as I know actually of myself, like some coaches who are deeply trained in NAM therapy and, you know, so yeah.
I always just want to validate that for myself because I've done a deep dive. As that's one of the things I've been studying. I haven't had the formal training. In fact, they just IFS just changed their training for only therapists now. So after all these years, and they have one for coaching that they just launched in the last few months. So IFS for coaches. So it's going to be really interesting to see that. So, you know, they have made a distinction, like taking different tracks on both of those. And you and I are talking about more integrating and opening to whatever streams seem to be meeting what our clients need in the moment. And I do think it's a scope of practice thing. If you feel, if you've been trained and you're feel confident about working with one of these other systems, then I think, you know, that's part of your coaching practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can be effective as that with clients that are coming with this. I mean, the client's always a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also don't feel drawn to, I mean, I'm not trained for this, but I'm considering doing the NOM training, but I know that I wouldn't do that to then start working with, you know, quite strong cases of shock trauma. And that's just not what lights me up. You know, there are plenty of people who feel really called to that. So
it's interesting you say that. Let me just interject because I actually feel very similarly.
Yeah.
I feel very similarly. I could easily go back and be a trauma therapist at this point of my education. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to help coaching because that's what lights me up is serving people in this way. And it feels like I'm feeling this in my around my body right now. So there's this like the coat of coaching is a little too small. Right now in this moment, it feels like, wait a minute, what?
Right.
You can't do that. You can't do that. You know, and I know I understand from an industry perspective that we have to differentiate ourselves as coaches. You know, we have to be a profession, which we're still pretty new at. We don't get reimbursed from insurance, for example. You know, no one pays for us except for companies sometimes pay for us. So there's that. And so we have to say, this is who we are. And this is our code of ethics. I understand that, but it's a part of a greater evolution of this profession. And what I mean, it was created by coaches, you know, I mean, all of this, it's a volunteer organization, not that it doesn't have paid employees, but it's a volunteer organization. So I think that is, it has to open with the conditions that are confronting it on the ground. And that, I mean, I'm, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I find that amazing you say that because that's what we've been exploring, and I've been exploring too. You know, literally, I've, you're not the only. You know, you're a very well respected, person within the field within a lineage of coaching and your own community. And I've heard several other people, you know, thought leaders in the field say similar things. And I think what you're saying is true. Is that everything evolves and adapts to its times, and you know it's coaching is a system, and that's what makes it beautiful. And then also at some point systems become limiting, and then do we step outside of that and transform the system, or does another system emerge which is taking care of something else? And I think it's like an interesting, like David Drake, for example, is one of these people who's both doing some really interesting work around how do we professionalize and mature coaching and the training of coaches, and how has that word become also too small, or, you know, even a little bit meaningless in these times where, you know, anyone can become a coach, and you've got 21-year-old life coaches, you know, which is a kind of, you know, interesting phenomena. And then you've got these AI coaches, and they're not really coaches. They're just like these bots that ask you questions, but they're being called coaches as well. So what do I, yeah. So if I get to the heart of it, for me, like I notice around me, there's a group of practitioners who are, you know, one of my friends uses this term mixed mystical arts, you know, so he's like, And he's trained in NAM therapy. He's been a coach, but actually he's working in a post-coaching space where what leads is the living revelation of a transformational connection. I'd say that's true for me too. You know, now we have to be careful with the, like a pre-trans fallacy. Yeah. So the pre-fallacy is like, oh yeah, I can just go wherever I want as a coach. I don't, you know, and then you re-traumatize people. It's horrible. It's like people feel, you know, they're hurt. It's a poor experience. That's the pre side of it. And then there's the conventional, but the trans is like, I know these people, they're so skilled. They're so passionate about what is the living edge of this art of human transformation. And for them, it's like, yeah, I can't be limited too much by some of these ideas, whilst they've also done years of practice to be able to, you know, again, not be caught in that pre side of the fallacy. So,
yeah. I have several things to say in response to that. Is that all right? So one is coaching is a methodology. You know, that's really the core of ICF besides the credentialing coaches and the ethics. It's a methodology. It has 8 core competencies now. So that ensures some sort of consistency around it. And it's a methodology that can go anywhere. This is why I think partially it's so effective. I found it more effective than being a therapist with folks that were functioning, you know, pretty well functioning in their lives. I found it much more effective. So it was easy for me to make that transition from therapist to coach because it was actually the methodology of coaching that supported my clients to help them develop, help them learn, help them grow, help them mature, you know, because it wasn't led by me. It was followed by me. They led. And I think that's another thing that makes coaching really different. And what comes to mind also is Doug used to say a lot, and I'm sure you've heard him say this, Doug Silsby used to say, coaching is like, we call it that now, but this has been an art from time immemorial, from humans to humans. You could call him a shaman, you can call him a witch, you could call him a healer, you can call him lots of different things. You can call him a parent or a grandparent. So this is that relationship of care where one places themselves in service to the other. So, I mean, we're calling it coaching these days. It's great. And people are already adding meaning to what that name means. Like you're saying, like you just said, I mean, lots of different people are saying they're coaches now, with or without training, with or without a methodology. Yeah. So already the name is changing in terms of what that really means. And I don't think the customer is all that aware. Our clients are not all that aware still of what they get when they say, oh, I think I need coaching, or someone tells them, you need coaching in this leadership position. So you need to change this behavior or whatever. So that's also an interesting piece, although it's getting better. And a lot of organizations in the U.S. now, I know in other countries it's different, but now they're beginning to ask, you know, organizations are saying, are you credentialed? You can just say you're a coach and work for us, sort of thing. So that's good. That's progress. So the other thing I want to say is another teacher said to me, not Doug, I used to say, you can just hang a shingle and whatever gets people in the door. What's it matter what you call yourself? You know? So it's whatever gets people in sitting together with you to support their evolution. That's what really matters. The names at some point, they matter very conventionally, very practically, of course. And once you come in the door and you're together, you know, like we're experiencing right now, things are emerging, you know, I don't even want to postulate what that is. I have my theories and understanding about that more from a spiritual perspective. And some people may not want that, you know, so it's just what's emerging that makes it mysterious, magical, attuned, and I think promotes healing and whatever level that is, at whatever level you want to call that. Because it's needed. You know, we are in a really interesting time as humans on this planet. And I think, you know, we have, there is a big, big movement toward collective healing possibilities. And it's just, that's just what's being asked for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that actually this is where I feel approaches like presence-based coaching and, you know, there's men like Aletheia, the Steve March's school, there are others where it's working in the way that you've just described. That actually is more healing than some therapeutic approaches. I'm careful here. This is a very broad brushstroke. What I mean by that is that, you know, I like Steve's notion of like there's a self-improvement paradigm and an unfolding paradigm. And in the self-improvement paradigm is you know, often perpetuates a sense of lack. You know, it's like I've got to strive to improve myself. And, you know, the YouTube is full of self-improvement videos. But it often, will perpetuate that at the core, like what's actually, where it's actually coming from is I feel something's missing, something's lacking.
Right.
And what I think, you know, your approach and others is doing is actually saying, let's not play that game. Like, let's actually, you know, you come in with concerns and cares and struggles and desires, and let's just like, let's work in the present moment to meet what comes up as you share those. And as we let them be as they are, that's when this, you know, this sense of intelligence and healing kicks in. And so there are coaching and therapeutic schools based in both approaches. And so I feel very passionate about the, you know, the presence-based approaches coming. And, you know, I want to come to the ICF thing in a minute. But, you know, David Drake also said to me, he talked with Timothy Galway and John Whitmore, who were, you know, two of those people who were around at the start. And I think he said that they were the ones that used the word coaching and it took off. Well, what they said to him, he did an interview with them and they said, like, we never intended people to use that word. We actually didn't even really like it as much, but it stuck. And I was fascinated to hear that. I was like, wow, that's really interesting because, you know, the word has an energy to it, or, you know, it has a kind of potentiality to it as well. Of course, we can shape it, but.
So I want to say something just to that real quick,
jump in,
which is, I think it's a word for our times. You know, it's a word that fits for our times. And so there's a big span of time where it might not fit anymore. And so I'll say that on one side. And the other side of the equation is, I think why coaching is effective is because not all, so we have this beautiful methodology and blend of this emergent present space to follow someone's unfolding, support someone's unfolding, and we have this sort of on the ground practicality. That's what I really learned from Doug. It's the spaciousness and the rigor. So it's a polarity that both are needed. It's what he used to call the double helix of DNA. You know, it's the being and the doing. So both are needed. And I think, so that's what separates, I think, our methodology as coaches from some others, you know, which is that we have this focus of change on the ground, of supporting our clients to actually practice something different, to actually behaviorally change something. And that takes a lot of inner being exploration and work prior to being able to shift something in the doing. Because the doing is, you know, there's a lot of obstacles on the inside. That's my view of it. And so I think coaching can really support a different, helping people to show up differently from what they discover, you know, is in the way or they really want or whatever that is. And then they can actually do differently. And so I think that's what makes it so powerful. It's not just, you know, a way of exploring self. You could call that a spiritual practice. This is more of a methodology that actually supports people's maturation as an adult and actually being able to show up fully more as themselves, which is what I find most of my clients really want. They want to be themselves and something in the conditions they're facing, inner, relationally, or outer, are preventing that. So then you're getting to the human want. You know, what do we want as humans at the depth?
Yeah. I mean, I find it even to separate being and doing or inner and outer difficult these days. In a way, it's useful, but the reality is for me, it's that separation doesn't really exist. Like that, and I feel particularly with inner and outer, you know, the inner work and outer work, or that, you know, the inner work and the outer world. That one was, very interesting when that started to fall away in terms of, they're really, they're really part of the same stream, you know? So again, whilst it is interesting and useful to separate them out, and there is, you are like reflecting and sensing oneself, you know, your body, awareness, emotions, whatever is arising. Like, I just find the shift is creating the different potential for action and seeing. I mean, this is what I remember Doug talking about as well, actually. So, it as it occurs. So, yeah.
I think it's useful at that level, at a certain level. It's very useful. And underneath that, it's non-dual.
Right.
I mean, it's not separate. Yeah.
Well, and sorry. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, it is non-dual, but even the way we've constructed like society with like a hyper individualistic sense of self and you know, a sense of being separate from the world, like that, it does get into spiritual non-dual territory. But even before that, you know, that unravels quite quickly, and you've got people like Dan Siegel who are from a neurobiological perspective really demonstrating the fallacy of that kind of worldview.
Agreed.
Yeah, go ahead.
Agreed.
Sorry, I don't mean to.
I'm
a little bit challenging or something. But
no, it's awesome.
Yeah. I do want to ask you about the ICF stuff. So, because that's another place that I've heard people say mixed things about it, you know, like both on the one hand, the need to define what mature coaching is, you know, because as we were saying earlier, that there's everyone's saying they're a coach, or anyone can say they're a coach. And what do we actually mean? What do people mean by that? What is coaching? So, you know, the ICF is defining competencies and a sense of what coaching is. And so that can help with the maturing of the profession. And on the other hand, people challenging that we can't reduce coaching to a simplistic set of competencies, which are often quite static. Or, you know, one recent post, I'll just see if while I'm saying it, I can find the author of it who I can name check. Here we go. Lawrence Barrett, who I don't know, but he posted on LinkedIn, in recent decades, the focus of coaching has shifted from developing craft to accumulating badges. And then he goes on to talk about the McDonaldization of coaching and how it's become like a kind of a production line in a business. And makes that post just went crazy on LinkedIn. You know, fascinating responses. And, you know, he was saying, like, I do think there's a value in codifying coaching, but the way we're doing it has pitfalls. So, yeah, I'm just curious about how you find that. Yeah, how you work with those.
Yeah, I feel I don't have those views, but I feel that tension between the need for some sort of definition of what it is that we're doing and some sort of way that it feels like sort of a rubber stamp that's, you know, ongoing, that people have to do in order to be seen as competent and all of that, and the tension there. So yeah, I think it is an interesting tension and pressure on us as coaches. And I'm grateful for the ICF, and at times you know, I'm very frustrated by the limitations that kind of structure creates. And we're talking about what is coaching now. You know, that's I'm sure there that's in there. Well, I don't know because I don't volunteer there, so I don't know. But I imagine it's in their conversation. How can we meet coaching? I mean, I know the new code of ethics really opened up, and I really liked that, the way they included a bunch more of people and roles. And so I think they're responding, and it's an organization. It's a system. It's going to be slow, you know. And at the same time, I love coaching. So I want to support what supports coaching. And if that means that it's going to be that we broaden whatever that is as a practitioner, you know, maybe then the ICF competencies will catch up with that. I don't see any limitation in the competencies, actually. I think it takes a while for our students to actually embody them and to do their own work around, you know, actually delivering them in a way that's useful and that is present. That's not an easy task. It takes, you know, some dedication and some practice. I mean, just like any behavior change does. So I love that. And maybe ICF will come back and say, oh, well, actually, you know, we were going to change how we feel. I don't think the definition of coaching is limiting in itself. I think the parameters around, we don't want to be seen as therapists because we're going to get into legal trouble. We don't want to be seen as consultants because that's actually not coaching. It's telling, not asking. I think those are still okay. And I think we as coaches are free to stay within our scope of practice and then experiment from there. And at the same time, take care of our clients. So back to the original topic, when clients are showing up with traumatic symptoms, in their soma, in their somatic, in their nervous system, that's impairing their functioning, then I think we have an obligation to name that, to offer hope that they don't have to live with that. And there are trauma professionals that can support them. And they can go with coaching or not coaching. I just think that's good practice and that's care. And there are some things we can work with in a coaching setting, as you said. There are things we can work with if we are we are training there, it's in our scope of practice, we all feel confident with the application of it, then I'd say, yeah.
Could you name some of those trauma signs as we're coming towards the end of our conversation? Because we kind of bookmarked that. But
yeah. We did. Thanks for going back there. So I would say really to pay attention as a practitioner to nervous system regulation. So what that looks like is, you know, if a client is feeling safe, then they're engaged socially, if you use the polyvagal theory. If they are feeling threatened, and it's a neuroception, according to polyvagal theory, it is not actually something we're conscious of. So there is something around us that feels unsafe, it feels dangerous, cues of danger. There's something in the relationship with our coach, like suddenly I'm overlaying my father on you right now, and I feel small and helpless, for example. From my own history. So that could create a cue of danger for me, or an internal voice like, oh, I'm not doing very well in this podcast with Joel. And that could make me feel collapsed or whatever. So what that can do is move me out of that window of tolerance, to mix metaphors there, mix theories there. And I could be in sympathetic activation, which is a natural state of our nervous system that gets me motivated to do a project, for example, or clean a house before company comes or whatever. So that's great. And if I have a pretty narrow range bandwidth in that window, then I could get stuck on that in the sympathetic activation, which is energy. And then I find myself, I can't sleep at night. I'm endlessly scrolling on social media. I feel angry and I want to punch my coach, you know, or I want to, you know, whatever. So, you know, I want to expend that energy and I don't know how to turn that off. Yeah. So that's one. I feel rage, you know, I feel terror, whatever that is. So a lot of strong emotions is a cue of that, a sign of that. And then another direction I can go is to the parasympathetic. So that would be, I've had a great meal with friends on my deck. I'm sitting back and I'm resting, and I'm digesting, and we're just enjoying a conversation, watching the sunset. So that's the parasympathetic. That's the natural way that supports us in our nervous system. And if I'm have a narrow window, I may go down into dissociation. I'm crying. I can't stop. I am feeling collapsed. I'm feeling like I can't move. I'm immobilized. So those kind of things, I'm stuck on off, stuck on the brake versus stuck on the gas or stuck on. And so that can happen either direction. And so what we can support our clients to do is come back more to that within their window. Because over time with traumatic experiences, sometimes the window really narrows. I don't know if you've had clients that have come in and they just can't settle. You know, they just can't, like their legs are moving all the time. They're twitching, they're picking their nails, whatever that is. They just can't center or settle. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they've had a traumatic experience in the past. And it also could mean they do. They can't settle because it's scary. It's not safe to settle for them in some way they're not clear about. And so I'd be curious about that. Mm. You know, I'd be curious about that with a client. So we can become, as trauma-informed, more aware of these cues of danger and that activate our clients when our clients are in one of those two directions. And there's mixed directions. There's a lot more detail about this than I'm giving a very broad stroke here. But there are ways that we can support our clients to become more in safe and social back in their sort of nervous system window of tolerance, so that they can actually think clearly and they can make different choices.
Nice.
Is that helpful? Is that what you're
That's helpful. Asking? Yeah, very helpful. Mm-hmm. I think for people listening as well to just, loop back to when we were talking about how we can become trauma-informed. And I also want to refer to, I'm not sure which podcast it was with, but with David Trelevin, people like that, we've also talked about a little, we probably could have gotten into that more today, but what can you do in those moments? You know, how can you actually help your clients? Did a podcast with Deb Dana as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's wonderful. I followed her for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And David.
Just one quick last question then. Is there just something you've been really inspired by that's giving your coaching inspiration or your own practice as a coach inspiration at the moment? It could be anything really, from a teacher or a book or I don't know, you know, really anything. Like, yeah.
I have to say, I'm finding this conversation really inspirational, Joel. I'm actually pretty jazzed about that you're in this big question about coaching, and surprised myself in the middle of our conversation that I actually felt that coat was too small. So it's really interesting. So to me, that's some sort of inner information, you know, from my body that, which I've learned to trust that, so maybe I have been holding it a little too small. So that's very interesting to me. And also I do feel pretty passionate about training my own students around the intersection of coaching and trauma, and that we, in our stream of coaching, at least, because we teach in person, we do work in and through the body as well as the nervous system. We have skills already. We just need to understand what to look for and how to support it. And a lot of it is, as we know, doing our own work. And I just feel it's really important to serve our clients in that way, because there's a lot of trauma symptoms showing up in coaching clients these days. Not all, but definitely some. There's a lot of stress, especially in this country right now.
Yeah. Well, BB, just thank you so much for this conversation. I really enjoyed myself.
Thank you.
And where can we find out more about your trainings and your work?
Yeah, presencebasedcoaching.com. No hyphens, just all one word. And we just started our new website. So go take a look. I'm pretty excited about it. And it was lovely, Joel. Thank you so much for the invitation and for the conversation.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us, so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.